Bonjour, Tansé, greetings, bonjour, everybody. Given my indigenous roots, I'm certainly not a lumberjack, kind of the opposite, and I was related to many fur traders. Some indigenous peoples actually do live in igloos and own dog sleds, but I'm not one of them. And while I don't know Jimmy or Sally or Susie, I do know the Governor General. I have a chief, a grand chief, and even sometimes a prime minister, but never, ever a president. I speak English, French, and Anishinaabe, and I pronounce about Baba. I proudly sew the country's flag on my backpack when I travel, and right next to it is the embroidery of a crane, a marten, a bird, a fish, a bear, a loon, and a deer, the seven original clans of the Anishinaabe people. I believe in peacekeeping, democracy, and diversity, all things introduced to Europeans by indigenous peoples. And I know that assimilation was the mantra of people who tried to exterminate my nation. And thanks to Indigenous peoples and treaty, Canada is the second largest landmass, the first nation of hockey, and the only safe haven left in North America. My name is Negan, and I am Kanata, the original Indigenous name of this place, and a name that means the village. In a village, you're never alone. In a village, you share. In a village, you fight off invaders. I am Kanatian!
The Winnipeg Free Press proudly presents, in partnership with CJNU 93.7 FM, Negan and the Lone Ranger. Here are your hosts, Negan Sinclair and Dan the Lone Ranger Lett.
Welcome to Liberation Week here in Canada, as we are finally able to acquiesce and become the 51st state here at the Negan and Lone Ranger podcast. And if you're still listening, I'm impressed. Welcome, Dan.
Yeah. I have had, I wrote a piece on the weekend about, how like, you know, Canada and the US were kind of like long standing lovers and, you know, Canada has called the US for dinner. And said, look, I'd like to say it's me, but it's not. It's you. And we can't go on like this. And then I had three very impressive people, Mariette Miller from the World Trade Center and the Bank of Canada, Gary Dewar, former Manitoba Premier, and Lloyd Axworthy, former parliamentarian, talk about how what we have to do to have an open relationship where we're free to trade and date with other trading nations. Anyway,
so a polyamorous vision.
That's right. And I got a really good reaction to the piece, but I did get a couple of people who said, oh, for sakes, write about something else. You know, I'm so tired of hearing about Trump and Carney and poly. It's like, well, you know, like it, like buck up.
Well, you know what, Dan, are you feeling the love? Are you feeling the attention? Because every federal leader wants to come to Winnipeg, it seems. It seems like everybody is making this the campaign stop. In the past, I don't know, what, been 3, 4, 5 days? We've seen everybody. Everybody's coming.
I think it is so adorable that you think that they love us. You know, honestly.
I described it on a TV show today. Adam, I said, we are the borderland between conservative and liberal, and Winnipeg is the center.
Yeah, but I wish that was the case. And I mean, it is the case.
I think it sounds way better than anything you guys have to say.
However, here's the thing that makes me sad. It's that we are usually so devoid of attention. We're like that person who's so excited that somebody finally looked at us.
Yeah.
You know, you guys are the glass half empty duo over there.
No, they are all, it's a box that's been checked. Been there, done that. Nobody can accuse us of not visiting everywhere in the country. And I think outside chance that we see any or all of the three of them one more time, I think you could definitely see Yagmeet Singh.
I was going to say, we are the, you know, in Titanic, the door that you're just floating on and holding on for dear life after the Titanic. That's Manitoba for the NDP.
Yeah, that's Elmwood Transcona.
Elmwood Transcona might be Leonardo DiCaprio in this scenario.
I don't think that their appearances in Manitoba this week were particularly representative of anything other than, you know, they like to kind of, you know, hit all the time zones and all the postal codes. But, you know, more will be revealed later, you know, as the campaign goes. Polls show the Liberals with a roughly an 8-point lead, 7 to 8-point lead in most poll trackers that measure poll results over several days, which you have less poll shock when you track trends over several days. The seat projections have put, I believe, CBC and Nanos have a better than 90% chance that the Liberals win the election and win it with the majority, which is so hard to believe at this point. You know, I think the race may tighten a little bit. I think the Liberals have to be concerned if the lead gets any bigger, because then people won't come out to vote.
There'll be some apathy.
They'll just think, I'm not going to vote because Negan's going to vote for the Liberals. So there are some ridings that work.
There is a fascinating, I wrote about this in my newsletter. That's shameless self-promotion, Bedaj Moen. Everybody can free sign up on the Free Press website. Dan also has a newsletter too. What's the name of it, Dan?
Not for attribution.
Not for attribution, of course. Yeah, everybody go check it out. It's a great.
It doesn't have a romantic.
We don't do enough self-promotion just generally. But anyways.
I thought you did enough of yourself for the both of us.
Anyways, in my newsletter, I talk about.
Have you written a book lately?
That's enough of that. Okay. I point out that there is a really fascinating report issued by the Assembly of First Nations, which said that 36 ridings, there's 343 up for grabs this federal election. 36 of those have a percentage of First Nations voters, which is larger than the vote spread from the previous federal election. In Winnipeg West, the battle between Marty Morantz with the Conservatives, Doug Yolofsson with the Liberals, there's only a 1% spread, 24 votes famously last federal election. But there is 3% in that riding First Nations voters, and who knows how many Métis Inuit voters. Now, we know that that's a very progressive riding, famously provincially voted for Logan Oxenham in a portion of that riding. So there is a very set of progressive. There's also a real keen awareness around healthcare because of the hospital that's in the area. If you were to somehow mobilize that vote, you've got some interesting trends happening within Winnipeg West. And I just bring that up only because in this election, this 3% might matter.
No, I think there's going to be some super tight races across the country that determine, the polls at this point are very broad strokes. It's going to come down to getting out the vote. I still think the Conservatives think that there are untapped non-traditional voters. People who don't vote, who could maybe be convinced to come out and, like St. Patrick, rid the country of snakes, Liberals, stomp them out. It's going to be election night is going to be fun to watch and to see what happens, because I think there's probably there's probably going to be some curveballs.
Yeah. Why aren't we doing a live taping? Adam?
That's a really good question.
A live 24-hour-a-thon for the federal election. I could just see you, Dan. You'd bring in the donuts. You'd bring in the pizza. It'd be good times. We'd do a lockdown just like during the Manitoba budget. You'd have a great time. Sleeping bags.
S'mores.
Somebody has to bring the Crown Royal Special Reserve.
Oh, yeah, my gosh. Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right. Now we just over the line.
So now it's time for you to tell us who our guest is.
That brings us to. We have a very special guest this week. Long-time readers of the Winnipeg Free Press will know that many, many moons ago, we had a Manitoba legislator, correspondent, a reporter who started her career in many ways with the Winnipeg Free Press. After 17 years, went on to work for our colleagues over in the Canadian Press, which for those of us in the biz know that it's kind of the national set of reporters that work, that, you know, we oftentimes publish or partner with. And she's now located in Ottawa. It's Mia Rapson's going to be joining us this week. And I know that you have a long-standing relationship. You used to be duty editor for Mia.
I used to be the assignment editor when Mia was first starting out as a political reporter. And whatever good she does, now I'll take credit for that. Whatever she's bad at, I blame on other editors whose names shall not be mentioned. It's convenient that I'm still around and they're gone, so I can say these things.
And the self-promotion continues.
You
know,
you want a different kind of history? Get your own podcast,
That's bitch. Right. Oh, my God. All right. Well, let's join our special guest for this week to talk federal election, to talk about Liberation Day, Mia Rapson. Welcome, Mia.
Thank you.
It's great to have you. And of course, I see you occasionally in Ottawa at a show that we are both on occasionally. And it's nice to see you, even though
you're not going to mention.
We won't mention the name of the show because we don't give free advertising.
Yeah.
Do we?
I don't know. As soon as somebody else from this, like somebody from CBC proper decides to appear in our podcast, then yeah, then we'll mention the CBC. But other than that, you know.
So, Mia, you've been covering Parliament Hill. You've been covering, formerly the Manitoba Legislature. And, of course, so you're very uniquely positioned for our conversation for today because it is, as we are taping this, Liberation Day. Do you feel liberated?
I feel liberated every day.
It's a significant day because today is the day in which, just in a few hours from our taping right now, President Trump is going to announce the end of the world. All economies will come to a screeching halt and we will all hand over every penny that in our pockets to the United States. Are you ready?
So that's the doomsday scenario.
Yeah. Are you not a little frustrated that I'm not going to give out the exact time, but that, we're sort of midday, depending on what your time zone is that the details of Liberation Day are still being withheld? Like, what is he waiting for, a primetime audience?
I'm not even convinced that he has the details. I think he's waiting for the details himself. I mean, this is sort of the message we've been given for days now, is they're not going to get ahead of the president because he is unpredictable and he has a habit of changing his mind, and something that he thinks this morning might change by the afternoon. And it's all incredibly complicated. So it is frustrating because, we've had this conversation in our newsroom the number of times we've had to update a story after it's been written because he has said something, and then we read the actual order and it is not in at all what he actually said it was going to be. I think frustrating. It should be called Frustration Day, maybe, is a better
Frustration Day. I have a question for you to start off for today. And I was thinking about it as I was thinking about our interview that we're going to have for you for today. I was asked this question by a Toronto media person who, and they said, why are all the federal leaders coming through Winnipeg? Like, why is it that in the past 36 hours, 48 hours or so, we've seen all the federal leaders who have come through Winnipeg? We had Mark Carney here in front of a big, massive Canadian flag at the hung off the legislature, rehung, as it were. We have Jagmeet Singh this morning, who's in Winnipeg. We just saw Pierre Poilievre just a short while ago.
On the weekend.
Why is it that all the federal leaders are coming through Winnipeg, which seat-wise isn't probably going to make or break this election, but they're still coming through Manitoba?
I think it's for a couple of reasons. One, they want to represent the entirety of the country in their tours. They want to show up. They want to look like they are campaigning everywhere. And if there is a place in the prairies where campaigning could make a difference to them, it is Manitoba. The seats in Alberta and number of seats in Alberta and Saskatchewan that are sort of in play are very, very small. Some polls would suggest there's not very many seats actually in play in Winnipeg, but they're probably closer to being in play than in the rest of the country, or at least, sorry, the rest of the prairies. For the NDP, it's a big deal. They have, now this is now going to test my very specific Manitoba knowledge here, but the NDP have
at least
three.
Two, maybe three.
At least two.
At least two. I mean, one is almost a certainty, yeah. Winnipeg Centre, and then there's right. Transcona Elmwood, which is a Blakey riding that's up for play, and then kind of a couple other ridings which are potential, and then of course there's Churchill.
Yeah, and I mean Churchill is always a unique riding in terms of it doesn't necessarily, polls are very difficult to determine what happens in Churchill. It's a lot. It's a very local local race, we know that. But in Winnipeg, like the NDP, I mean, this isn't an existential crisis for the NDP in this election, because they are on the verge of being eliminated as a party, depending on how things go in right now. They have seats in Manitoba, seats in Winnipeg that they've held for a long time. They just won one of them back in a by-election, but they kept it in a by-election last year that the Conservatives put a lot of effort into. So for Jagmeet Singh to be campaigning there, these are seats that he still thinks he can win. And almost or a must win if he's going to have any kind of representation there's some suggestion right now that the NDP would be lucky to win 3 to 5 seats. So it's tough for them. The Liberals want to pick up some seats in Manitoba. So that's why they're there. And of course, you know, Elmwood Transcona is definitely still on the list for the Conservatives for a pickup. That's probably the only seat, I think, in Manitoba that the Conservatives might think about picking up, but they have some seats that are at risk. I mean, North Kildonan, St. Paul is riding. It's a seat that the Liberals used to hold. And if the Liberal numbers in Winnipeg that the polls suggest they're at hold, that's a seat the Liberals could take from the Conservatives. So that's why they're there. They're partly because they want to make a show of the prairies, but there's also seats that they actually are in play and that they need to sort of make a lunge for lack of a better term.
Yeah. So, and be honest now. So what was the reaction in your shop in Ottawa when you found out that Pierre Poilievre wasn't going to let you guys go on the plane with him? Because I have my own reaction, which I'll share with you.
He's still quite bitter about it. I'm not sure he'd be on the plane, but he's still bitter.
I mean, like, I had heard rumor of this ahead of time. So what was the reaction?
I mean, it has been on the surface that this was going to happen for months. They were the only party that wouldn't give us an answer. When they were 25 points up in the polls a couple months ago, I was convinced it wasn't going to happen. The leader, Pierre Poilievre, his campaign manager, Jenny Byrne, did not want reporters on the plane with them. There were people within the party, other staffers, senior people who thought that was a mistake. And so they had been going back and forth on this for a long time. As the polls started to change and the Conservatives were no longer up by significant margins, the hope was that maybe they would feel they had to change their mind, that they would feel they would need the media coverage. They didn't. So the bigger frustration was that we didn't find out for sure until just a few days before the campaign actually was launched, which made planning. One of my jobs is scheduling for everyone in our office. And so trying to figure out that schedule all of a sudden has become a lot more complicated. That said, we're making it work. And it's more to their detriment than ours. And to be honest, we've been able to make it to every single one of his major, he calls them message events. We would know them as news conferences. We've been to almost every rally, if not every rally. But what we're not getting and what they're not getting reported on, and maybe they don't want this, is some of that in-between stuff. Things where you can get a sense of how the leader is being received, and how, and rather than just at a big rally, you know, you stop by to do a couple photo ops, you see how people are reacting to him and what they're talking about and what they're asking him about. And that's the stuff that's missing from this campaign in a way that you just get much more easily when you're on the plane. So the reaction wasn't happy. I can't say that we were thrilled with the decision. But to be honest, it's also given us some flexibility. We've been able to do things instead of being totally trapped with the campaign on the tour, going exactly where they need to go at all times. We go and do his news conference, and then we can go off and actually dig into stories and do our own reporting on the ground with more flexibility. So it's not all bad. It is harder. It's not all bad.
Well, it's, you know, the problem that I have, because I've ridden the planes before, and I do think that the soft contact that you have with the leader and the leader's people, mm-hmm. and the chance to kind of chew things over and, you know, I know what you guys said, but what you really mean kind of conversations mm-hmm. are really valuable. And I think it's a bit of a miscalculation. But the worst part of it is, like, I had this whole image in my mind for what was going to happen in the last week of the campaign on Pierre Poilievre's plane. And, you know, if things continue to go bad. So if you saw The Dark Knight, you know that it opens up with, like, Bane, you know, showing up on this plane and they blow the plane in half. So I thought they would pack all the reporters into the front of the plane. And then Jenny Byrne and Pierre Poilievre would, you know, they'd be airlifted out as it blew up and, like, hit the ground. So I can't use that for the top of the column now. So
I mean, it is to their detriment at times. I mean, last week when Donald Trump unexpectedly announced those auto tariffs, we were not expecting those to happen that day. Carney had the extreme good fortune of having announced an auto event and an auto thing that morning, but that was a happy accident for them. We were not expecting that to come down that day. You already had Carney responding. You had Jagmeet Singh responding very quickly because he had a media contingent with him. Pierre Poilievre and his team had to scramble and find a way for him to suddenly do a statement to reporters who were gathered at a rally. And it was not everybody was even going to be there. So it was later than others. There weren't necessarily as many media there as they would have been if they were on a plane. So it is to their detriment at times. But like I said, we're making it work. It's got its ups. It's got its downs.
It's got to be also like a self-fulfilling prophecy to say, well, the media is a problem, and then create situations in which the media has deep problems to cover you. So now you can say, well, look at all of these. We didn't get fair coverage. Well, the fact is that they weren't with you. And one of the main problems I've heard is that when you don't have media with your campaign, they have to constantly try to catch up, find even basic things like parking, which can delay you mm-hmm. from being able to attend an event. And then also finding a place to write, not being on the bus, is almost impossible to be able to if you're on the road. I don't know if the regular public kind of knows about the things that media have to do kind of on the road and how that delays you.
Probably not. And I don't know that the public cares that much about those kinds of details, except that when they want to know what's happened on the campaign, if they go and they might not have access to the conservative announcements or details or news as early as they would if it was done another way. We've had to tag team a lot more than we would have. So, I mean, we're using up more resources just to cover that campaign. You know, it's a little bit, I've described this campaign, usually I call the election as our Super Bowl. It's really more like the Amazing Race right now. it's just from one, you know, map spot to the other. We spend a lot of time every day trying to figure out how we're going to cover it, which we just don't have to do with the other campaigns.
Better than Survivor, I suppose. But now this is the million dollar question I think everyone's asked. Everyone asks everybody else. It seems like on every show I'm on, this is the question that comes up every time. How much is Carney's lead, small that it may be? We've had Eric Grenier on the show a few times. Mm-hmm. And one thing that we're sort of suggesting, or that we've had suggested to us, is that we're looking at about a 5-7% lead probably mm-hmm. for the Liberals, which then turns into, I've seen as high as 195 seats.
200 plus now in the Nanos.
Potentially 200 according to the Nanos. How much is that Carney? How much is that Trump? Or obviously the answer is probably a mixture of the two, mm-hmm. but is it increasing? Like, have the Liberals peaked? That's really, I think, the question, because is the Donald Trump show ever going to get stale before the federal election?
No, that part I can say is not going to get stale. Prime Minister Carney managed to win the first week of the election because of Donald Trump. He's not a politician. He's still learning as he goes. I have said a few times they made a strategical error by not putting him out in front of the media and doing more scrums and media veils during the leadership when the stakes weren't that high for him, because he was clearly going to win that. And that never really seemed to be that much in doubt. Now he's doing it in real time and he's stumbling and he's having trouble, but every time he gets into trouble, in comes Donald Trump essentially to save him. It's, last week he had made a mistake. He mispronounced the name of a new candidate in Quebec, and also got the location of the Montreal massacre in 1989 wrong. It was starting to dog him. And just as that was starting to unfold, Trump comes in with auto tariffs and he gets to look prime ministerial. And then he had a call with Trump, and like, there was no doubt he won the first week of the campaign. Second week of the campaign, the Liberals they made him a strategical error, not parting ways with a candidate who had what we sometimes refer to as a bozo eruption. He didn't let the candidate go, and this dogged them for days. The day that starts to become another big story, because they finally did let him go, not only do the conservatives also have two or three candidates that they've parted ways with, in comes Donald Trump again. So the Trump factor, to answer your question, is not going anywhere. It's going to keep coming up. And it is a very big factor in this election. Going just by some polls, more than half of the people who have switched to the Liberals since and not just not liberal supporters, but those who actually switched to vote for the liberals since the beginning of January have cited Mark Carney and Trump. Those are their top two reasons. And as a combination of factors, you know, they look at Mark Carney as someone who's managed the economy through very, very sticky times in the past. And even through that, what conservative governments in Canada, you know, had praised him for. He's for many Canadians, he is coming off as the steady hand on the wheel that they need right now to tamp down their own anxieties about what's going on. The other factor, though, is Poilievre himself. The conservative numbers that were, even with those giant leads that they had in the fall and early part of this year, were never based on people's enthusiasm for the leader. It was more that they didn't like Trudeau, they didn't like the Liberals, they wanted change. They now get change without having to leave the Liberals, and the enthusiasm for Poilievre is still sort of, it's sort of right where that base number, the Conservatives always have about a 30 to 35% base number, and that's where the enthusiasm for Poilievre always was and still sits. So it's a combination of all of those factors.
You know, it's always thus in party politics that political parties that are about to implode usually do things in the lead up to that that betray the notion that they had any idea that they were at risk. And, you know, like I think back to, this is, you know, we're digging, but, you know, in the 99 election that Gary Doer won, the Progressive Conservative Party spent $1.5 million renovating their headquarters on Kennedy Street and finished the renovations like 45 days before the election, not reading the writing on the wall. You know, so I can't get over the idea of Pierre Poilievre doing an exclusive interview with Jordan Peterson in January. Like, this just keeps throbbing in the corner of my mind as I sort of think about this, because that is like, you are only speaking to the wingnut crowd through Jordan Peterson, right? You're talking to the radical libertarians. You're talking about the far right, anti-vaxxers, anti-everything, anti-government. You know, you're talking about ridding the government of anti-woke ideology. I guess the question we're all going to have to answer, how did the conservatives not see that adopting the lexicon of Trump world wasn't going to backfire on them? Like, why didn't they start, you know, moderating what they were doing last November? You know,
I mean, there's people in the Conservative Party that are asking those questions. Yeah. I mean, that was one of the big things in the first week of the campaign was, you know, people who are and have worked for the Conservatives in the past coming out, MPs, they're like, what are we doing here? Because, you know, and it was one of the stark days last week was you have Mark Carney coming out and, you know, putting back his prime minister's hat on and responding to Trump tariffs with a $2 billion fund to help the auto industry. And that was the headline on the conservative announcement that day, was they were allowing people to put another $5,000 in a tax-free savings account. And I mean, I'm sure for people who want to put $5,000 more in a tax-free savings account, it's a great day. But at the same time, their messaging is that people don't have an extra $5,000 right now. So it seemed a little bit odd, but it also just this the scope of those two announcements, and they weren't pivoting. And a lot of conservatives were wondering, when are we going to start? Like, there is one issue that Canadians are really caring about right now, and the conservatives were not talking about it. That's changed now. He is starting to talk about it. He, you know, he came out this morning. He had an announcement talking about wanting to renegotiate the Canada-US trade deal early. It's, you know, get it. Let's get it reopened. That's fine. Except people have been talking about that already happening with tariffs. The call that Mark Carney had with the president last week, they finished by saying that they would agree after the election to start negotiating a new economic pact. So it just still feels like it's a little bit delayed, but he is responding to that. That said, one of our reporters spent a lot of time following Poilievre around in Atlantic Canada over the last sort of several days. And he's talked to a lot of people who are attending his rallies and events. They're saying the same things that Mr. Poilievre is saying. One of the reasons the conservatives aren't pivoting is because those people at those rallies are saying, yeah, Trump is Trump. Anybody can deal with this. It doesn't matter who deals with him. I care about this. I care about the carbon price. I care about affordability. That's what they're hearing from the people who are really backing them. And so that's, I think, a large part of why they're not pivoting, because within that bubble of support, they are responding to the messages and the demands that they're hearing.
So Chris Selly in the National Post wrote a column a couple days ago that says, like, well, why would you change strategy when 38% of the public mm-hmm. is supporting you? And I could point out one really good reason, because 38% isn't enough to form government.
But it usually is.
usually is.
Well, not – no, it's not.
In the past, 38%
is enough for the Liberals to support government because – or form government because they have a really efficient vote. But the
Stephen Harper formed a minority government with 36%.
Yes. No. But he was also – he had support in Quebec and Atlantic Canada. Mm-hmm. This Conservative Party appears to be retrenching to Northern Ontario – and the West. And I think this is, it did, like, you probably did follow the 2023 provincial election here pretty close. Yeah. Like, so the Progressive Conservative campaign, they bet on the fact that they didn't need to build a big tent, mm-hmm. that they could draw in enough support by not competing for that centrist big tent. And, Marty Larkin and Heather Stephenson massively miscalculated on that.
Well, they can start a support group with Jenny Byrne if this one ends up in the same way.
Yeah, no, there's a special purgatory for people that run. I'm not sure. I do understand they're going to blame the media about this. That's why, we've been. And why he's like, they said he would be doing interviews with local media when he was traveling, but he's not doing interviews with anybody. Actually, is it just, I was going to ask you this, is it just my imagination or are none of the leaders doing interviews right now? I can't find evidence that any of them are.
Yeah. I have not seen evidence that they have done any so far. I've heard about a few that are coming up that I'm probably not allowed to talk publicly about. You often, when they're in a location, they'll do, interviews, especially with like local private radio or some of the ethnic language media. It happens. And I haven't actually seen a ton of evidence of that. Although, I also admit that I live in my own little bubble in Ottawa and don't always see evidence of all of those things. And, a conversation or an interview that one of the Liberals had with one of their local media outlets in January just lost him his re-election bid. Yeah. I don't think that's why. It is actually sort of interesting. I mean, this is how Mark Carney ran his campaign, his leadership campaign. He didn't do interviews. He talked to American media more than he talked to Canadian media. So the one thing that the parties all feel, the Liberals and the Conservatives in particular, is that they have so many ways to get their message out directly to Canadians that they don't need to do as much media, earned media, as we like to call ourselves, as much as they used to. So there's that as a factor. The Conservatives also, 2 months ago, this was going to be a victory lap for them. They didn't think or didn't seem to think that they had to do much in order to bring it home, to quote the Conservative leaders, one of his favorite slogans. The two big things that they planned on running this election against were Justin Trudeau and the carbon tax, and neither of those things exist really anymore.
Not even in BC.
In BC. People were asking, in mid-February when it was clear that neither Justin Trudeau or the carbon tax were going to be on the ballot, were asking then were the Conservatives, how they were going to pivot, how they were going to reshape their campaign. And they just did not. They seem to have a plan and they're sticking to it. And no, right now, 38% isn't enough because the Liberals have gained almost all of the support that's collapsed from the NDP and the Bloc in the polls right now. They've taken some of their support back from the Conservatives. I think, a month ago, the Conservatives, or 2 months ago, were at 47-48% in most polls. So, they've lost 10 points. All of that's pretty much gone to the Liberals. So it isn't enough. And, It does seem odd that they have been so entrenched in their in just continuing on with the strategy that they had, except that this is also the strategy that Justin Trudeau did for the last 2 years. People told him for 2 years, you're a problem. You're dragging your party down. It's time to leave. And he kept saying, well, no, if we just say it loud enough and long enough, people will start to hear it and they'll come to our side. So
Trudeau also thought that Trump was going to create sort of an opportunity for him to be able to be a sort of national leader that he tried to grapple onto right at the end there. We sort of have time just for one more question, but I think it's a big one. Today, Mark Carney suspends his campaign. announces rather loudly to everyone who can listen, I'm going back to Ottawa to be the prime minister now. Mm-hmm. And of course, Pierre Poilievre doesn't get an opportunity to do that. He's made an announcement that nobody really has heard about or isn't as interested in anyways. Mark Carney gets to be the prime minister to make this kind of combative announcement in relation to the retaliatory tariffs announced by Trump. So if we were advising Mark Carney, do you tell him just keep going, appear prime ministerial, even though you may not always be the greatest at French, you're gaffing fairly regularly on press conferences, but just keep, stay the course, keep going. The momentum is there for you to be able to just ride this sort of facing off versus Trump all the way to April. Is that the plan, or the April election?
That seems to be the plan from the Liberals. I mean, they like what they're seeing. I think that Mark Carney went into this leadership race and then, you know, this election, he knew that this was a possibility. They were seeing signs that this, I don't think Mark Carney would have entered that leadership race if he didn't think he A, could win it, but also could then go on to win the federal election, because he didn't necessarily do this so that he could become the shortest lived prime minister the Canada's ever had. He, I think, knew that this was a possibility, and this has been their strategy all along. I would be fascinated if I had a time machine and could live back if Carney hadn't come in, and if we were living through this with Justin Trudeau, where would we be at?
Or Chrystia Freeland.
would the Liberals be doing just as well? Is it that I think there is clearly a Carney factor there that Justin Trudeau would not have been able to play? I mean, Carney is a change. People want change, but for many of them, Carney is enough of a change for them to switch theirs or come back to the Liberals. So if, you know, why would the Liberals change things up right now? It's working for them. So that's why the question for the Conservatives, if it's not working for you, why are you not changing things up?
Well, I can't say thanks enough for coming, taking time out of your very busy day, particularly today, because today is in the media world, as we say, a very full news desk. Full of different demands in your time. No doubt your phone's going to be exploding for the second you turn it back
That's
on.
That's just a day that ends in Y these days.
Yeah. But big Miigwech, thanks for appearing here on the Neon and Lone Ranger podcast and for coming back to the Free Press.
Yeah, anytime. I'm always happy to be from, I play up my Manitoba background on an almost daily basis. You can ask my colleagues. So
the best parts. So Miigwech.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Miigwech, everybody, for listening to the podcast this week. We want to thank our great friends, our colleagues over at the Winnipeg Free Press, Paul Smith, editor, Wendy Sawatsky, who's constantly, you know, working with us to get this up on our website. And we'll see if we're all here next week. Dan, do you think we're going to be here next week?
I do not believe the end of the world as we know it will come next week. As a matter of fact, I'm heavily, you know, wagering on the over-under that the country will still be here.
But cars will be $2.5 million to buy, and coffee will be impossible to purchase. Chocolate will be off the shelves.
I just want to say right now, you know what is a really bad idea? That I'm currently involved in
I want to hear this.
Spending the whole day reading news from the United States, and then at night I'm rewatching The Handmaid's Tale. And so, which is a great show with a very strong Winnipeg connection that we'll talk about in some future. But it's like I'm not sleeping at all now.
When Margaret Atwood wrote that, she didn't intend for it to be a handbook.
Yeah, it's coming across like a really stylish documentary. So,
I look forward to constantly and seeing your happy face / big bags under your eyes when we do our next week episode. Big Miigwech to everybody for listening this week, and thanks so much. We hope that you're all here, and don't dig your bunkers just yet. Mm-hmm.